Okay, so this is one of these usual very embarrassing talks that one gets, which have to cover such a broad field of things that you can only get it wrong. So first of all, I apologize if there's a bit too much click, but of course it's the stuff I find most easy to find. But I'm trying to get a mix of material as much as I can. So I will give a bit of introduction to detector requirements and experimental conditions. Then I will talk about the various concepts, trials and click, and then some mixed in some stuff about detector optimization and some RD. So a bit of history on linear collider detectors. So of course the history is much longer, but let's start at 2009. There were two detector concepts for the ILC that proposed a letter of intent. Prior to that, there were even more detector concepts, but since 2009, this has converged to two detectors. I think there were maybe three letters of intent, no? Four. But it boiled down to two, let's say it like that. And they're called ILD and SID. Then around 2008, click detector study started, and we took ILD and SID as a base. So we used the same concepts and tried to adapt from them. Then in 2012, click conceptual design was decided, and it used the so-called click ILD and click SID detectors. And in 2013, there was the ILC TDR or DVD, whatever you want to call it, with the detector report, with presenting again both ILD and SID. And in 2015, CLIQ opted for a new optimized detector, which is still taking elements from here. But now it's only one detector for CLIQ, and there's a draft note on it. It's not completely wrapped up yet. So, of course, when you want to build a detector, you look at the physics aims. And they're essentially the same for the three concepts. So you want an excellent momentum resolution, and this is motivated by things like neural endpoint spectra, Higgs recoil, mass, Higgs coupling to muons. And so there's a number of examples which tell you that this is the resolution you want, and here you have a plot with different resolutions in the fascination study proposed. Wants an excellent gap energy resolution because one would like to separate two gap events originating from either W, Z, or X. And this means that you need a gap energy resolution of 3.5% for energies above 100 GeV, and this translates into 5% above 50 GeV. And this impact parameter resolution should be very good. It's 5 micron combined with 15 micron for the Nopkins coupling term. I think ILC puts here 10. And then one wants excellent angular coverage, and in particular for forward electron and photon tag. And then this needs to be combined, so you have the requirements of the physics, and then you have the requirements that come from the detector environment. It's there that I wasn't fast enough finding the right numbers for the ILC, so also I apologize. There is a table next, but I wanted to be better. So if you take the click experimental conditions at 3 dB, so this is the instantaneous luminosity, but then the beam comes in so-called bunch trains. So bunches are separated by half a nanosecond, and there's 312 of them. And this together takes 156 nanoseconds. And then there's about 20 milliseconds of silence, and then the next bunch train comes. So it's at 50 hertz. If you calculate it, this means you have a very low duty cycle. Moreover, this comes with extremely small beams. 45 nanometer in X, 1 nanometer in Y, and sigma Z is 44 micron. Remember, for example, in the LHC, and this is several centimeters. So if you want to do primary vertex separation, you cannot use this coordinate as your separation factor. So it's this timing here and the narrow beams, they're quite driving factors for your detector requirements. And of course there is the high energy that plays in. LAP had only four bunches or so. And, so the luminosity is 10 to the 32. The bunch crossing separation was microseconds. Yeah. And so there was enough time for readout. And there was very little beam-induced background because this goes as a fourth power of the energy. So there's lots of issues that you have at high energy that you don't have at lower energy. Now the issues are there for the ILC, but they're much stronger for PIN. If you can, yeah, because they would meet each other at the wrong place. So it's a similar table with some more ILC numbers, as well as I could find them. This is a luminosity measurement. We need very low angle electron identification. For example, we use it in the Higgs to mu mu because there is a background, I think it's E plus E minus to E mu mu or something like that, that has a lot of electrons there and that we suppress. This is one of the most prominent examples where we use it. If you want to do dark matter searches with photons from initial state radiation, there's a number of examples. I'm not very good at cutting them up like that. There is a number of examples. ILC and click information. So you see here instantaneous luminosities. So this is 500 dB, 1 dB, 380 dB, and 3 dB. The luminosity in the top 1%, so around the nominal beam energy. So you see the numbers here. So 60% typically up to 1 dB, and then above 1 dB, this effect becomes much stronger. Bunch crossing separation is much larger at the ILC compared to PIN. The train duration is therefore also significantly larger, so this is almost a millisecond, whereas we're here in the nanoseconds. Rep rate is 5 Hz and 50 Hz. Now note that the fact that the luminosities are similar while the rep rate is a factor 10 different, this means that at the ILC, the integrated luminosity per bunch train is actually higher than at click. So some of the accumulated backgrounds, for example, if you deal with a slow detector like a TPC, you still have to, it still starts to add up. It's rather for click that you need the timing, but there's still an issue that you have to make sure that your cell sizes are small enough when you only want to read out at the end of the spill. Because this time is short, is say much longer than this one, but it's too short to read out. So you still have to make sure that your occupancy is not too high, or you have to start working with buffers and like you do at the LHC. But all of this means, sort of, the principle is that we read out in both cases without a trigger. So you make sure your occupancies are low, and then you just accumulate data until the end of the bunch train, and then you read out. Yeah. Yeah, so in all the analyses, we use, of course, the beam spectrum. And the issue is that you have to measure the beam spectrum in situ, which we have shown that one can do with Baba events, a large angle and small angle Babas together. You have to know it, but it's not a big handicap in your physics analysis. It's, of course, one of the questions we had to answer when we started studying, but we did answer. It's coming. It's coming. Well, it's not coming in the detail that maybe you would like to see it, but yeah. But you have the top study where it's taken into account and it has a small deterioration, but this was relatively minimal impact because the ISR does something very similar to you. No, but this was all tested for the top threshold, and there was an impact, and there was a difference between ILC and CLIC, because, okay, ILC has these larger bunches, so the beam swelling is a bit less prominent, but the impact on the result of the top mass was rather small. So what happens is that the two beams come at each other. They have each 10 to the 9, 10 to the 10 particles. Of course, one is positive, one is negative. When they come close to each other, they kind of attract each other. So whatever you wanted to avoid all along the LINAC happens at the last split moment. And so the beams are pulled towards each other. This gives you some kind of synchrotron radiation. And the photons that are created, they sit in the field, in the very dense field of the opposing beam. And this gives you a number of processes locally, just there right at the interaction point. And these are called coherent pairs. And that's enormous numbers. It's like 10 to the 8 particles per bunch crossing. But they are at very, very small angles. So they just disappear with the outgoing beam. Then you have incoherent pairs. That's the, I'm sorry for the quality of the curve. So that's this one here. This extends into the detector area. And it's normally very low PT particles. Then you have trident pairs, which is a process that actually doesn't impact on the detector itself, but also gamma-gamma-2 hadrons, which one can see here, and they impact on the detector. And they have particles with, this process has particles with somewhat higher PTs as well. It's mostly forward, but also takes central parts of the detector. So essentially, this process here is mostly at small angles, and it impacts your detector design. You have to just make sure that your occupancies are low and that you avoid backsplashing from forward elements of your detector. Whereas this one gives you deposits in the calorimeter, and you have to suppress it in the data itself. And of course, this beam straddling also gives you important energy losses right at the interaction. And this leads to that only 30% or so is in the top part of the energy spectrum. And this is just the energy spectrum on a linear curve. Now, most physics processes are actually studied well above the destruction fell short, and you profit from the full luminosity. And for those processes, like the topmass or thresholds, then of course there this impacts more. But as long as you know the spectrum well, the impact is. So what do these conditions then give? They give you high tracker and vertex detector occupancies, and so you need small cell sizes beyond what is needed for resolution. For example, at Click, we have the pixel detector has cell sizes 25 by 25 micron. So we have the same cell size in the direction of the B field as in along Z. And this is just because we can't make the surfaces bigger, even if maybe for detector resolution reasons, you could have stretched it a bit more along the Z direction. And also in the tracker, and in particular in the forward tracker, but even all the barrel layers, we have to go with either large pixels or short strips. So in the inner parts of the detector, even on the tracker part, the strips can only be one millimeter long. And in the outer parts, it's like 20 millimeters. So it's really different from MSC. The background suppression at Click, we need highly granular colorimetry, because then we can reconstruct full particles rather than hits. And this allows to reject them at the amount. And we need an overall need for precise hit timing for each of the detectors. And we can do the job when we have 10 nanosecond hit time stamping in the tracking and 1 nanosecond accuracy on colorimeter hits. And then you can find algorithms together with the fine grained colorimeter to solve the issue. No. It's a train crossing. Your ultimate aim is to do good physics. But your ultimate aim is not to know from which bunch crossing that the physics came. So in fact, no. So on average, at high energy, you have at most, but typically less than one hard physics event. But over that, you have this whole junk. And you have to reduce the junk so much that it doesn't hamper your physics. But that doesn't mean that you have to know from which exact bunch crossing the bunch was coming. You just have to cut in time so much that your physics is nice. Whereas at lower energy, if you go at a few hundred dB, the only physics process that has a higher rate is the Babson. That goes above one per batch train. Below, I don't know exactly the energy, but maybe 400, 300. Because that raises with this lower center of mass. So the low duty cycle gives you the advantage of triggerless readout, and it allows for power pulsing. It means that you can turn the detector on and off with these bunch trains. And this gives you. Yes. So it's a whole system that you put in place. So already when you turn on your electronics, you have to count for a few microseconds, because you have to make sure everything is stable. But this is typically, we have tried it, we've worked with it, it's like a few microseconds. Then the analog part of the electronics, you just turn on when the beam comes. The digital part of the electronics, you can profit to spread your power dissipation, because you always have, for example, on the vertex detector, a number of chips to read out. So you can use this gap of 20 milliseconds to read out one after the other and kind of have a lower overall power dissipation. But in the end, you can reduce your overall power dissipation by a factor of 50 or so with respect to leaving it on all the time. So this is significant. This is significant in the material you need on your detector for cooling. As soon as you have a liquid cooling, you have pipes, you have liquids, and this is material. As we try to go to the absolute minimum, this helps. And so we've been testing with air cooling. Now, whether we will finally do that, I think the power pulsing we may do, the air cooling. If you ask my opinion, I'm not sure. What it also helps is in the calorimeter, because the fact that you don't need local cooling, that means your active layers can be thinner. And so you have a smaller Mollier radius. You can have just more compact calorimetry, which is an advantage in that. So then the concepts. So as I said, they all resemble each other. So let's start with the silicon detector SID for the IRC. So this is the layout here. Here you have a big scale. So it's a very compact detector. Along Z, it's only 5.5 meters long. Here you have the forward focusing quadrupole. This is a picture from the TDR. There are some changes since then. You see a cone here for the outgoing beam. I will come back on this. You need this to keep incoherent pairs confined, and also to have, for the luminosity calorimeter that sits here, you want a flat surface, and you don't want this this skew impact of particles on a beam pipe. So you see a silicon tracker, the ECAL. This tracker is compact, it's only 1.2 meter tracker like this. ECAL, HCAL, and the solenoid is 5 Tesla in this case. It's a very high field solenoid with a relatively small radius. Well, not so small, I think it's 2.7 meters, right? Whereas the CMS one is 3 meters. And is almost 4 Tesla. What you can also see when you compare with LHC experiments, that here you see almost a 1.1 ratio between the length, the half length, and the radius. And at LHC, this is much larger because you have the boost of the quark and gluon interaction in this high speed stretch. Here in the linear collider, you want this to be compact because these elements have to sit as close as possible to the interaction point, and they have to be well stabilized. You have to avoid long lever arms, and you have to have this close. But I will come back on that also, because for click, this becomes a problem. This here, this is the ECAL. I don't know why this has a different color. Okay, so you see it in a blown up picture one more time. So here you see these forward calorimeters. LumiCal for luminosity measurement has a somewhat larger opening hole than BeamCal. So this one catches the smallest angle, which I think is 10 millirad approximately. And here you have the PD0 final focus in the So I have to be kind of, random. I show some things from each experiment because there's no time. So here you see, for example, the momentum resolution of the silicon tracker in SID. And if you look at the efficiency as a function of angle, you see that the minimum tracking angle is around 10, 12 degrees. So it's a relatively large angle, which is fine. For the few hundred GeV energies, but if you go higher, it becomes more problematic. And this is an example of the R&D where we try to make this tracker as thin as possible. So on top of the silicon, this is a silicon sensor, a few centimeters by a few centimeters. There's a double metal layer on the top, and then there's a readout chip with 1,000 channels that is immediately bonded on the silicon. IMD detector. The main difference is here is that this detector has a somewhat lower beam field, 3.5 Tesla, and it has a large TPC detector, and this gives it a larger tracker radius. All detectors have fine grain calorimetry, and I will come back on that. So there is a TPC detector, but there's a complete envelope of silicon inside and around the TPC. So there's silicon detectors in the vertex detectors and the forward tracking here, and then there's an envelope around the TPC. So the TPC that makes ILD special. So it's long, it's 2.35 meter half length, 1.8 meter outer radius, give you 200 space points along the track, and with a resolution of about 100 micron in the R5 plane and 400 micron to 1.5 millimeter in the SAT. This depends on the bit length, and it allows for the EDX measurement for PID, but I think that the EDX has not been used yet in the, benchmark studies. Now, the main advantage of the TTC is that it gives you all these continuous hits. So it's very good for particle identification. The TPC actually doesn't help very much in the momentum resolution because the silicon is so much more accurate that it actually dominates your result in momentum resolution. And there's a large R&D effort on gas detector technology with different readouts. Click detector concept, as you see, it looks very similar at first. So we go for 4 Tesla fields. So this is the newer click detector, 4 Tesla fields. Fine grain carimetry, this has to be deeper than for the ILC because we have to go up to 3 TeV. A main silicon tracker with large pixels and short strips. An ultra-low mass vertex detector. And a forward region with compact forward carimeters, but we have moved in our latest design this final focusing quadrupole out of the detector because we needed forward acceptance and we wanted to try it out in this configuration. So the QD0, so for that we had to make the detector as short as possible on the beamline to still have the QD0 close enough to the interaction points. So it's now at 6 meters. We don't know yet the exact penalty in luminosity, but it points at the 10% level. But the penalty in luminosity depends mostly in beam simulations on some of the fluctuations of beam positions, etc. And it's the tails at the main of the beam that determine it. So the machine experts have to try a lot of combinations to give us a more final. The pixel detector is quite challenging for click because we need the very high position resolution of 3 micron, which, I mean, in LHC detectors, this is rather like 15 micron or so. So it really pushes very small pixels with pulse height measurement because we need to interpolate between pixels to get this point single point resolution, and we need good timing. This together, so all these requirements individually can be met, but the combination is very difficult to meet. It has to be ultra light, like 5 times lighter than LHC pixel detectors. The only advantage we have is that the radiation level is not very high, and we have quite an effort on the pixel detector. I cannot go into detail, but we are trying various technologies to see how we can push things in the right direction. Go with presently the most advanced, at least within particle physics, microelectronics technology for making very small pixels on the ASICs, which we combine with very thin sensors. But what we see is as soon as you make the sensors extremely thin, it's okay for the electronics to see the signal and to have a good signal to noise, but the signal is not spread over several pixels. And if it's not spread over several pixels, you cannot interpolate and you lose some resolution. And then the 25 micron pixel size doesn't give you the 3 micron position resolution if you cannot share between them. So we're trying other technologies like high voltage CMOS sensors combined with this pixel readout ASIC. And this may ultimately allow us to go to smaller pixel sizes. Also, the current pixel size of 25 by 25 micron is extremely difficult to get bonded, especially if you can't work with full wafers, which is too expensive. If you have just small pieces, almost impossible. Slack is trying this for us with some success. So we're doing quite a number of different things, including special interconnect technologies to make sure that we can tile things very well and we don't have too much overlap, don't need much overlap between modules because that's again extra material. This is power pulsing we've been trying. This is very thin supports, microchannel cooling is being tried, and air cooling is being tried on simulation level, but also in a full mockup. Then calorimetry and PFA. So it's the jet energy resolution that actually drives this overall linear collider detector design, because you would like to have fine-grained calorimetry combined with particle pole analysis. Now, what is this? So a typical jet composition is 60% charged particles, 5 nucleons, 30% photons, and 10% neutral hadrons. Now, the charged particles are best measured in the tracker. Photons are quite well measured in the eCal, but the neutrons are badly measured because you can only rely on the hCal, which doesn't have such a good resolution. So if for every particle that you have, you can use the best possible information you have, then you get a better jet energy resolution. But this means that for every particle you have to in a jet, you have to kind of match the tracker information with the calorimeter information. And this you can do with a combination of fine-grained detectors and sophisticated software. CMS has done PFA, but more in the sense of an energy flow. It's not distinguishing individual particles, but it's still using some of the basic principles, but their calorimeter is too coarse to see individual particles. I think the approach is quite different because there's a lack of information there. So as soon as you have the information, you will use it. And so where you learn is how this is matched up in continuous energy flow between the tracker and the calorimeter, and how you deal with leakage and such things. So there are elements where you can learn from each other, but we have just more information, so you tackle it in a different. It's just a blown up. I think we're now going to do it in FCCEE, where Patrick Janot has his way of looking at the problem, and we will come with ours and see where this goes. So of course this is very attractive, and new technologies allow you to think about it. When the LHC was built, one couldn't even think of doing things like that because we didn't have like silicon 40 multipliers or the dream of having such large silicon surfaces and the like. I cannot go into detail, but there's many, many technologies pursued, many prototypes, very interesting R&D. It gives very detailed information on shower structures, which is then used in Géant for other clients, for particle physics as a whole. So this is just a good impression of some of the things we've done. Now, when we started for Click, people said, this particle flow will not work for Click because the energies are so high. That the particles in the jets will be too close, it will be too boosted, and one will not be able to do it. And finally, it does work for Click as well. So here you see for different jet energies the resolution that is obtained in simulation, of course. And you see it doesn't depend too much on the... And recently, we have quite a lot in new optimization studies, and there's been very many, and this one plot doesn't show the extent of the thing, but of course, what is even more recent is that suddenly there was this attention for photons, because we didn't really have physics examples from the linear collider physics that we were studying. We didn't have a drive for photon energy resolution. So we did, for example, eCal optimization studies for jets of different energy as a function of the number of eCal layers, so in how many depth layers do you split up. And you see that apart from lower energy jets, it doesn't depend much on the number of layers. However, if you start to generate photons, 100 GeV, or 10 GeV and 100 GeV, you see it depends on that. So while after the technical design reports of the ILC, we went to try to reduce cost and diminish the number of ECAL layers, we are quickly putting layers back at the moment because we want to be in good position if this photons to be detected. Most of the other physics cases that we checked out, like dark matter searches, there were a few examples, we didn't find the way. So the ILC detectors will function in push-pull, so you, as you have only one interaction point, you have to put one detector in after the other, and so they go alternatively, and there's quite some engineering involved to do this in a very efficient way without losing too much time. I think for CLIC we have kind of given up about it. Here you see a picture of the forward region, so the interaction point is somewhere there. This is this luminosity calorimeter. Beam cal with a carbon disk before to absorb backscattered particles, and the QD0. So this is the forward region layout for CLIC in the CDR. And then adding this up, so this is a permanent magnet quadrupole, which needs to be placed at very high mechanical stability, which needs a special support. Then it needed an anti-solenoid to protect from the solenoid field, and altogether this was 1.3 meter diameter catching and upstream the forward region of the detector. And this is a picture on the forward calorimeters that sit there that have to be extremely compact to have a very small Meunier radius to catch this for this luminosity measurement. Then if you look at angular acceptance, so here, for example, you have a Higgs production at different energies. So this is Higgs Stramo. Here is produced very centrally. So this is the polar angle. Then at 350 GeV, WW scattering becomes already wider, WW fusion. Then at 1.4 TeV and at 3 TeV, you see it becomes more and more forward. So all this stuff in the forward direction was problematic because it was just covering our acceptance. And it was even more so if you have double Higgs production, because then the Higgs is produced with these angles, but then the two just go apart and it was a handicap. So it's been motivating some of the changes that we had. Also, you have these beam crossing angles, which is 40 millirad at ILC and 20 millirad at CLIC. And you need this cone to keep clear of the beam-induced backgrounds. So at the moment, we can push the tracker acceptance to 7 degrees at CLIC. We've been stretching the detector a bit in the latest, at least the tracker part, to gain forward acceptance. Here you see, for example, a picture of an optimization of the beam pipe and the vertex detector, where you have here intensity of particles from an incoherent pairs. And this gives you a minimum radius for the vertex detector, which is 30 millimeters, a cone opening, and that's where you can place the detectors. And somehow, as soon as you have this cone, is also you see the beam pipe material is thicker here to still catch some backscattered products. So we're kind of stuck here with the acceptance angle. But we can increase at least, so we did the maximum here, and we've been increasing acceptance in the current. So this was the picture I showed you already. This was the CDR. And now what we've done is stretched actually the tracker, put only these beam calorimeters here, have full ECAL acceptance with all these three things here. And then we could go much lower with HCAL to get a better forward acceptance. But this will be at some penalty in luminosity because the QD0 is further out. But we want to try it out to really measure it because you cannot just parameterize this, especially not at this expense. Yes, yeah. Yeah, but you have to hold these things and you have to have an access scenario. So somehow if you figure out how to do it, you end up with this. But this tube is significant. This is 500 millimeter here. And it was 1.3 meter in the previous study. Okay, so sorry. So there's been many years invested in linear collider detectors. We profit from Tesla and whatever was there before. Lots of work in detector design and optimization, validation through physics benchmarks, extensive R&D efforts. There's a good level of consensus on general design issues. I think there's not much tension between choices. Okay, everybody has his preference, but it's quite convergent. So ILDS, ID, and click detectors have much in common. And I think the fact that Click stepped in with a new critical view and ended up with kind of very similar solutions is also nice. So there's many collaborative efforts. There's spin-off to other activities. There's the Bell 2 vertex detector, which was based on vertex R&D for the ILC. There's now the CMS high granular calorimeter MCAP for high luminous CNHC, which is a very big project. I'm sure there's more examples, but I ran out of time. So here you have a list of some of the collaborations. I'll still add LCTPC, but the link broke. That's it. For example, for Click also, we had this Click ILD in Click study. And we did our physics benchmarks either with one or the other. We didn't get the Click. And actually, the performances are very, very similar. The only thing, place where we really saw a difference is the Higgs-Off coupling, which is very forward, and the ILD detector has a bit more forward. So that's where we saw a difference. But other than that,